This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2022, held at Faith Builders on August 2 through 5.
All right, teacher-generated problems. We have a lot of classes that talk about problem students. How to deal with disrespect. How to deal with hard students to work with or difficult learners. And we need those classes. Obviously, while we'll look at maybe some of that from some angles, the focus here is coming back to the teacher. I suppose you saw the title and you were brave to come. Teacher-generated problems are the problems that you as a teacher can create. Well, of course you know that, but what are they? And if you notice, they have about the simplest outline you ever saw, because I want to just take your suggestions. I think you'll probably cover a lot of these, and we'll just try to flesh them out, and maybe even some things from your own experience. I noticed when I did this, here was the result. And it's a problem that we as teachers can generate. This is not to suggest, of course, that if you do everything just about right, you know, in other words, you got it down pat, that you are going to have almost no problems. But it is to suggest that there are problems that we can eliminate. And there are problems that the students have that we need to look back and say, have I contributed to this problem? And an alarming amount of times, we as teachers have at least contributed, if not totally generated, the particular problem. And so I think it just takes a lot of honesty to look at, where am I creating this problem? So how might a teacher generate disrespect? So zeroing in on this question. And then I want to talk about just some of our understandings, or how do we think about students maybe later in terms of, well, maybe let's just talk about that just briefly right now. As you look at your school and your classroom, especially if you taught before or if you heard some things about the school that you're going to go teach in. I've talked to at least one person like that, and a lot of teachers have, I'm going here, but I've heard of these problems. Does it matter with what expectations you approach your school? It does, doesn't it? If you already, and it troubles me a little bit, that we've kind of fallen maybe a little bit into, or maybe we've always been there, sort of this feeling that teaching is a tough job. I mean, we really do teach a lot of bad children. I mean, it's just, our schools are full of little rascals. And, you know, brave me, I'm going in there to try to teach school. Is that true? Well, of course there's some trouble here and there. But I would like to believe, and I had this under the bottom section, but I'm just say this now. I'd like you to think about this. Would it be true that most students want to respect you? They really don't want a bad year. So we have this, we do have two truths here, and they're sort of in tension one to the other. We do believe that children have the fallen nature. Well, who wouldn't believe that has worked with children, and you're honest with yourself? We all have this inherent tendency to be wrong, of course. But that does not mean that we believe in total depravity, if you understand that from a theological perspective. You know, we're all bad. It's all just, we're not quite there in how we define people. So yes, we have the sin nature. We have the tendency to be naughty and rebellious and all those things, these children. On the other side, God did create the heart of the child to long for relationship and want that. So I think a question that comes back to us then, what might we be doing wrong that is hindering this relationship? Rather than we're always fixing what's wrong with them, what might we be doing at times that blocks or hinders some of that natural longing to please? So that's, again, just think about that. What is your perspective on children and your students? Because it does make a little difference how you present yourself, how you present your policies, etc. All right. Let's go ahead and hear from you. There's not an exact right or wrong thing here. We're just going to go through just some practical things for us to think about. So let's zero in on the disrespect issue, though, because that is a big one. I would say most teachers go into school, especially their first year, with that being one of their greatest fears, right? What if the students don't like me? What if they disrespect me and I don't know what I'm going to do about it? All right, give me one. Okay, excellent one. So your example of respect, and you move toward authority over them, so let's start with that one. The authority's over you. Does it matter what you as teachers say about COVID? I hate using that word, but I'm going to anyhow. Now, we're a little beyond the worst part of the discussion. But does it matter if you say, yeah, I think that whole thing is just, you know, yeah, there might have been a little problem, but that the government's just out to get us. I mean, just, you know, Fauci, he ought to be fired, if you know who Fauci is, Anthony Fauci. Is it the CDC, you know, and the WHO organization, WHO? There's a conspiracy thing behind all of this, and you spin it with suspicion on authority at a government level. Do you think that matters? At some level, it does matter. Oh, that January 6th, that's just out to get Trump. Could it be the January 6th commission that's looking into what happened January 6th? I assume a lot of you know that date. Those who don't, just the whole thing that happened the day they were going to validate that Biden won the election, and then the whole Capitol riot, etc. Does it matter what you say about that? I think it really does. You know what the truth is? I don't think any of us really know everything about COVID. And what is the truth? I don't. How would you? You may be a person that is a fairly suspicious person, but you don't have to tell your students that. You can say, well, you know what? There's a lot of things we just don't know. Bottom line is, let's be respectful for those in authority. The Bible doesn't give any little clauses. Respect those who are over you, except if they, whatever. No, this just is a principle. And model that. It's going to be huge. When you expect them to obey something that doesn't make sense to them, but you, your obedience is in connection to respect. That's a challenge to us as fathers and leaders or teachers, etc. Let's model listening and cooperating when things don't quite make sense in a way we want those under us when it doesn't make quite sense. If it doesn't make sense means I don't quite listen or I'm not respectful, oh my, they'll pick that right up, won't they? Well, it just doesn't make sense. Thank you. Excellent point. Board authority, church authority, it's the same, isn't it? Please never, never complain to your students or say, well, I didn't like this either, but the board said so and so, so, you know. Teachers have certainly have done that, and it just undermines their authority when they expect to listen to. And may I just add right away, teachers, and I think you've probably all heard this before, but just even your cooperation in church life and your respect for authority. I've heard students reflect on that already. Well, you know, they see those things. Expectations, church standards, etc. They're watching. They're not just watching Monday to Friday. They're watching you on weekends too, young people, especially. Sorry to talk about you, but they're watching. They hear if you drive poorly, recklessly. Yes, they sure will. Or they sure could, and you don't want that on you. All right, next. What else causes disrespect in students toward you? All right, this is a very good point. So are you suggesting that you really shouldn't say to your students, well, I'm the teacher, and you need to respect me? Should you ever actually identify that in the student and call them out for that?
Somebody else can talk for that too.
Go ahead.
I'm not Mm-hmm. It will come if you, you know, maybe it's what we already discussed already. They're seeing that you're not consistent with what you're trying to tell them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Make a student feel really disrespected. Mm-hmm. One of the ways you could do that was is by saying, is this particularly for obviously more students, but giving a, or even saying things like, respect me because I'm a teacher, mm-hmm. isn't very respectful to their ability to process. It's very easy to explain to a student why they have to respect you. Like, just for order to happen, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very good. So you would agree that to actually at least harp on, well, I'm the teacher, you need to respect me. Yeah, usually that is not the best approach. Now, respect is earned, not demanded. Well, there is a side that respect is demanded, but that's not really for you to talk about too much. In other words, I hope we have patrons that when we as teachers do something wrong or the teachers don't agree, the parents say, well, you know what? Maybe the teacher, I hope this is what they're willing to say, maybe the teacher could have done it differently. I hear what you're saying. I do not agree with the policy that the teacher's always right. I don't want my parents to say that because I'm not always right. That sounds really good, and I love those parents, but let's not be disingenuous. We make mistakes. I have told my children that. And I want my parents to tell me that, the parents to tell their students that in relation to me. You know what? Maybe he could have done it a little differently. I wasn't there. I don't know. But that really doesn't change the fact that tomorrow you must go back and be respectful and listen and absolutely not be talking about it and creating a problem. So I think there is a place to say the position itself does mean demand respect. But from a teacher's perspective, please don't walk in with that swagger that I'm the teacher and the respect is going to come automatically because they owe it to me. From your perspective, yes, you have a lot of work to do to earn the respect of your students. Now, I think there can be a place, depending again on your relationship, maybe your experience or age and all of that, to, if a student would say something disrespectful in front of other students, to just say, that's not really a respectful thing to say. And move on. You don't have to say you disrespected me, but just kind of address it. You know, that's like if a teacher, a student, but you always do whatever. And this doesn't happen often, but I've heard of some amazing things that students have said. Even like, I don't like you as a teacher. Those are rare cases, but it certainly has happened to teachers. One teacher told me how that happened, and it was very nasty. Well, at that moment, I'm not sure that I'd have anything to say. But there can be a place to just say, that doesn't build good respect in our classroom, or, you know, that's not really acceptable. But if they feel like you took it personal and you're vindictive, yes, be careful. All right, what else? Things that breed disrespect.
Unclear boundaries.
All right, good. Unclear boundaries and moving boundaries. There's so many things here to talk about. Unclear boundaries. We could just talk the rest of the time about this, and some of this I do cover in another class, so I'm not sure how much I want to say about it now, but yes, unclear boundaries, just, you know, keep it reasonably quiet in the restrooms, and we can get away with some of that, especially with older students. You need to know, but the more you have a lot of fuzzy lines, then how do you define, one day it doesn't irritate you and the next day it does, right? And so it seems inconsistent to them. Well, you never said anything about that before and I'm not doing anything different. Well, no, but I'm getting tired of it. You know, so unclear boundaries, moving boundaries is an extreme frustration. The students are happiest if they know, here's what's expected of me and here's what I need to do. Do you like pretty clear boundaries as a teacher? Do you appreciate having a job description? So you do what you're supposed to do, but not more. I call it the overstep, understep. We can do more than what we're supposed to do, take responsibilities that are not ours, and it, you know, that doesn't work. or not do everything because we're not quite sure. You know, I'm supposed to be the teacher. What does that mean? Well, I think it sort of means this, this, and this. Well, it's nice to have a list. Here's what's expected of me. Same with students. They need it even more. Unclear boundaries or moving boundaries. There's always some fuzz in our boundaries, or in some. You know, sometimes older students, well, no, hey, let's just be reasonable here. But not too many of those, and especially not for younger students. Very frustrating, especially when they see you then coming back and blaming them or being hard on them for something that you had not been clear enough about. What else?
Mockery or sarcasm directed to students.
Okay. Oh. Mockery or sarcasm. High school teacher one time told me, I guess he was junior high, he just said something like, I just cannot stand the attitude of junior high students. Now, he was no longer a teacher when he said that, but he had taught them. No, he was just, he was a very intellectual man, very educated, and as he taught those juvenile behaviors, they were just disgusting to him. I mean, he wanted to have class. He wanted to, you know, teach. He was a smart fella. And when he saw that childishness in his students, it just annoyed him. What do you do about that? Is it okay if it's annoying? Do children sometimes act in obnoxious ways? You just better figure out what to do about it that they don't know it, right? I mean, they're going to have to work through it. Yes, they do annoying things. They do obnoxious things. But somehow, to work through that and pray for love, pray for grace, that you deal with that in a redemptive way. But never that you would be sarcastic or mock them. You really think that? Really? That hurts students, especially insecure children, children who maybe aren't even trying the most, and they, you know that. But then to make them a public example, think of something that we worked through a number of years ago, and as a boy just sobbed in my office, and I asked him, you know, what was going on, he reflected on the teacher, and that was the issue, that he felt he is made to look stupid in front of the class because of responses from the teacher in relation to, you know, some of the maybe even childish things he did or ignorant things he said. And thankfully, you know, I think things improved. But it was a real eye-opener to me how sensitive he was, even though he didn't act sensitive. Acted a little cocky. In fact, maybe there was a very reason he acted that as a way to cover for his insecurities and his, you know, grasping at trying to do well and could hardly do it. So he did some things that were not quite in line, and then the teacher responded to that. Well, the thing just snowballs. Any other comments on that? Did you have more that you were going to say?
No, yeah. Thank you for expanding.
Yes. Anybody else have down that line or something you've experienced? Maybe a hard lesson you learned. I don't know how honest you like to be. Yeah, good point. Something that seemed pretty harmless and good, but just turned a little sour. All right, and then to be able to just steer it in the right direction and apologize that, you know, this was a poor judgment of mine. I'm sorry about that. Let's shape it a little differently. Thank you. Being honest. Anybody else? Okay. Yes, write that down as a separate one. That's certainly on my list. I'm never wrong. Oh, teachers, I think we're doing better with this. I really do. But this can be somewhat of a personality difference, right? Some of us just have a harder time admitting we're wrong than others, just like students. It could be just wrong information. It could be something that the student knows that you don't know, and you were actually wrong. You presented it in an incorrect way. The student maybe kindly later or in class said, yeah, but the book says this. Don't spin it and roll it in, you know, so that, you know, back on track. Oh, you know what? You're right. I was wrong. I missed that. It shouldn't be that hard to do. I think, again, we're doing a lot better in just that humility. I say a lot better. I mean, the old way of saying, you know, that if the teachers, you know, admit they're wrong, then that brings them down in the eyes of the student. We don't think that anymore, if they ever did think that, right? We all agree. We admire people who are willing to be wrong, and they're humble about it. In fact, that will not just keep from disrespect. That will build respect hugely in your students. So it can be just those academic or misstatements, etc., or it can be where you made a mistake in relating to students. Now, later you realize, or maybe a parent says, what you did, how you related to something, what you said, how you played that game, your emotions in it, all those things. You know what? The student saw that and just have the grace the next day to say, I'm sorry. Forget the excuses. I was wrong. I was a bad example to you, and I'm ashamed of that. I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? Move on. I mean, have you ever seen students disrespect you then because, you know, you stooped to apology? Well, of course not. That's not how we think, right? You don't think that way if a leader or somebody says, I was wrong, I'm sorry. So the students are very forgiving. In fact, that melts their heart, even in older students, to see that humility. And what a beautiful example. All right, what else?
One thing that I think of that can be really dangerous to do this is when we as teachers have expectations of certain students that maybe a teacher's talking about how difficult they had it with a certain student. This happened to me where the teacher under me, before this school year started, said, this is just a really troubled child who's been acting up. And so before the school year even started, I had this idea of who this child was in my mind, and I found out partway through the year that, I know he had changed as well, but it didn't help to have that mindset of him to begin with. It caused me to lash out quicker and right from the get-go than it would have been for someone else.
Wow. That is an excellent, excellent point. So teachers on both sides of this now. If you are going into a classroom and you know some negative things, maybe from last year, your own experience, or you've been told, but if you leave a school, what you say about those students also matters. How cruel to give the whole load to the next teacher. Well, this student this and this student. It does color what you think and can put them at a very unfair position. I grieve. In my own teaching, and I think back of certain students, and I grieve to think of students coming to school and they hardly have a chance to please you. You know what I'm talking about? They hardly have a chance. Either it's that, you know, you just, the personality thing or academic. And I know some of you maybe heard me say this last week at Ebenezer, but I'm going to still draw this up just very quickly as an illustration. It ties in maybe loosely to this, but on the expectation to illustrate our students' abilities, which are, of course, very diverse. What do you do with that? We love these students. They make us proud. Listen, they don't even need you, do they? They don't really need you. In fact, maybe they're threatening. They can be when they're in high school. I've had students like that. It's like, wow. I mean, they just had an edge of ability that, whew, keeps you stepping. Can these students please you? These really test your teaching ability, your creativity, and they certainly test your patience. But it just grieves me to think of students in our school that they just really can hardly please you. Well, you might be nice, but you never express that you're proud of them. See, it's so easy to express really a lot of appreciation and, wow, they're a joy to teach. They learn, they respond well. Oh, I just love them. These students, well, maybe they'll move away. You know, our church is having an outreach. I wonder if that family's going to go along. Well, next year, whoop. I've had students like that. I guarantee you do. Does anybody, I wonder, did any student come to your mind? Raise your hand. Oh, boy. There it is. All right. Let's learn to love these students, to pray for them. Ever sit in their seat and pray for them? That can be good for you. Come in early, sit in their seat, and pray for them. Yes. Okay.
But I will say that in the 4 years that I did teach, I think every year I had, you know, one of those students that was on that bottom bracket.
Mm-hmm.
And I will testify that those were the students that also taught me patience.
Mm-hmm.
They were the students that taught you compassion. You didn't have compassion before you. They taught it to you without you realizing it. And therefore, I was grateful in the end for this.
Good. Yes. We're going to come back to just under disinterest, just to some of the reasons we see some of this. Of course, there's many. But for now, I just think about what are we doing. And if you would think about where our models are in our school, they're up here pretty high, aren't they? Like what we expect, our curriculum, our expectations, excellence, do your best. They even have a chance. Now, I know some systems use, and I think Christian Lately used to, and maybe some schools still do, where you have the honor roll. Is it fair to have a recognition that is based mostly on your gifting and then effort? But other students, even though they have effort beyond even anybody else, because of their gifting, they have really zero chance to ever be on the honor roll. And especially if you go into rewards based on that. Is that what God's going to do with us? Is that what God does to us?
No.
You have 5 talents, 5 talents back. You have 4 talents, 5 talents back. You got 1 talent, 5 talents back. Excellence. Try harder. Do your best. Can anybody give me a Bible verse that says the opposite of that? That God's expectations are based on opportunity. Other than that story, clearly.
Give as the Lord has blessed you.
Excellent. Doesn't say give as much. Here's the line. What else?
To whomsoever much is given, so much be required.
Are we doing that in our schools? It's part of the problem of our schools. One set of expectations, one set of curriculum. And I know we have ways of helping needs here and there. We do. But outside of that, in just more the average, we still got diversity. And we end up hurting these students. And why do you hate school? Why don't you enjoy school? Why do you hate the teacher? Why the sour attitude? Well, put yourself there for a little bit. No wonder they hate school. I just urge us together to really think and pray about these students and have a model in your school where every student can feel like they are a success. Every student. You don't want to have a single student who daily feels like, I can't quite get there. In terms of pleasing you. Well, they might never get there in terms of high academics. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about how you feel about them. Because if they know that you accept them for who they are and you verbalize that, now you're in a position for them to respect you. What else?
In adolescence, I don't have experience yet in teaching in school, but I've helped a lot of younger youth and things like that. And they are the best hypocrisy detectors out there. And in authority especially, I can see where, as a teacher, if I make rules and then I just kind of don't follow them myself, or maybe just simple things like running in the building or whatever, and I'm in a
Okay, excellent. So not following the rules yourself. Now, of course, there's some things that are different. You are the teacher. But I've even wondered about this. This actually came up at our school one time years ago. They said, well, the teachers talk in the hallway. Well, we're the teachers, and we have to. You know, it was a reminder to us as teachers. Okay, I think we can explain to the teachers. Well, the students, sometimes we're coming in from recess or it's the beginning of school and we're talking about something that's it's obvious we need to talk. Hey, what time are we, whatever. That's okay. We are the teachers. We're managing the school. This is about doing our job. That is different than laughing and joking in the hallway and they know we're just having fun talking to the other teachers, but they're not allowed to. So yes, following your own rules. And somewhat connected to that is even how harsh you are on things like forgetting, not completing something on time. Well, what happens when you forget? Oh, I'm the teacher. I have so many things to do. How hard we can be on students. Well, didn't you know that that's due today? 5 minutes later, oh, we forgot to make those photocopies. Out the door, make them, come back. Well, I just forgot. You know, I'm busy. But then how hard we can be that they forgot there's a test today. Well, I didn't study. You forgot there's a test today. I mean, I forgot to photocopy them, but boy, you forgot to study. That's a lot worse. They see if we allow for our human error and forgetfulness, but boy, for them, it inconveniences us, and they see that, irritates us, and then we hold them to a tight line. But in other things like the hallway, etc., they certainly see through that. Be careful. Even, and this is, I have this down as a different one, but it relates, so I'm going to put it in here, being a poor sport. Now, this doesn't affect maybe the lady teachers who are there out there playing, you know, a game, and you're not really involved. But if you are middle grade or high school, I will admit, I get very frustrated when I'm on a volleyball team, and they just mess up and mess up, and it's like, really? I've been on her team, or his, sorry about that. I've been in teams for the last 5 times, and I mean, we just can't win with this situation. And they, you know, tell you, teachers have done it. I'm sure I have done it. You start just being a little rude, jumping in front of people and just kind of, you know, you don't say a whole lot maybe, but they can see. You're frustrated. When it's your turn to serve, I mean, you serve. When it's your turn to spike, I mean, and then when we see a poor sport in somebody else, then, of course, we call it out. Like, well, you get sort of desperate when you aren't winning, you know? You get kind of that look on your face. Well, look, that look, you know, just, again, they just smell those things out. If make a mistake like that, apologize, right? We talked about that already. What else?
Not hearing their frustrations and fixing the problem.
Okay, excellent. Do you have a platform where your students can talk and say some things? I think one great thing to do, this is middle and upper grades especially, you will get some value out of asking your student, maybe partway through the year, say, you know what? What are your ideas for school? Now, if you get that thing on a roll and they're raising their hands, depending, that might not go so well. But if you just ask them, why don't you write down some things that you would enjoy if I would do differently, maybe? Or things, ideas you have? I don't want things like extra recess every day. Okay, please don't write those down. That's not what it's those smart things. You can tell them that. Write down some things. I have gotten good things back from students. Like, I wish we would sing more. I wish we'd take more time to discuss this or that. You may learn some things, and you can incorporate those. You can thank them for that. There's some really good ideas that I just didn't think about. Whew. The teacher cares about what we think. Excellent one. What else comes to your mind? All right, that's actually the very first one I have written down. Favoritism. Can you help it? Do you have any answers for this one?
Each student is an individual and you do treat them different. But you shouldn't show special favors to one over another. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is probably especially a challenge to teachers who are real people. You know, they just love children. Not just academic. They just love working with children. They just love relationships. And there's some children that just, oh, you just, do you find it easier then to get them to do certain things, right? Okay, I need somebody to quickly run to the office and get something. Three hands go up. Do your students know that? Well, it'll probably be that one. Or probably won't be me, because I never get to do it. Now, of course, if it's a student that can't be trusted out of the classroom, okay, I understand that. Do you know what I mean? I find it very easy, because you want to please them. You do really want them to like you. I mean, this really matters. And so you want to keep them happy, maybe because you're actually a little afraid of them, or because you just want to please them. And you just kind of play into that favoritism. They will smell that out, won't they? Even in those small ways. How do you say good morning? Do you say it the same to everybody? With the same cheerfulness, with the same look on your face? Good morning. Is that hard as a student to love? Good morning. Here's your favorite student. Good morning. Just try to keep that as even as you can. They listen. They hear. They could probably tell you if you're not quite fair or if you aren't doing well with this and breeds tremendous disrespect. I think another thing that simply brings disrespect, and we're going to cover this in another session, so I don't want to say again a whole lot, but that is simply, we had the lines thing, but that is simply being too loose of a teacher. Just simply too loose. I know it seems like they're going to all like you. They're going to really like you if you give lots of privileges and you just kind of allow a lot of things. At the end of the day, you will pay for it, right? Teachers that are experienced, at least, you will pay for it. Because once you finally start tightening it up, then it's confusion. Why are you changing it? Well, it wasn't sustainable the way it was. So just your room, too loose in general. I'm appalled sometimes at some of the classrooms I've seen of just, it felt really chaotic. And I don't know who was listening and who wasn't, but it was clear that it really hindered the learning process. And the respect is never significant in those rooms. Never. Anything else on this section? Okay, being unreasonable. This can be at many levels, can't it? Expectations, academic expectations. Just beyond what's fair and reasonable. I would love to talk about this a little more, and maybe I'll just say this unreasonableness in this whole thing. Remember, fairness and sameness are not the same word. All right? Fairness and sameness are not the same. We don't achieve fairness through sameness because sameness creates unreasonableness for certain students, certainly. Winning the heart of your student. Well, I think we've covered a lot of these things, but I would like to go back to what I said at the beginning. One of the ways is to believe in them that they want to do well. Believe in them. Have that as your model of your students, that they come into your room and they want to be respectful. They want to do well because you will then position yourself with that assumption and they see that. They know that. Work hard to trust them. Okay? Work hard to trust them. And when you feel that trust slipping, I think you should address it, especially in middle and upper grades. Now, I taught a lot of my years were in the upper older students, but I remember having to go to my students and just saying numerous times and saying, listen, I don't know what to do, but I just don't feel as trustful as I should. And it's putting me under pressure. I'm feeling like I'm the cat and you're the mouse. And I don't enjoy this, and I really don't think you do either. I'll admit, I come in the room, I'm on edge, and I don't know what to do about it. It is partly my problem, and I think it's partly your problem. I mean, can we change this? And really, honestly talk about it at the end of the day especially. I just feel something doesn't feel quite right. And I'd like to come back tomorrow, and I'd like to just trust you instead of the suspicion. Know that you want to make school work well, at least, you know. When there's a problem, we have to deal with it, but I don't want to be a suspicious teacher. That breeds tremendous disrespect, is a suspicious teacher. They just look, just watching. Reminds me of Bible school many years ago, of course, when I was in Bible school as in a youth. Two men, I still remember them, and I can still remember their demeanor quite well, that would monitor study hall. That one man looked like he could bite nail heads off. He sat there just, and it is embarrassing, but we dickered him. And people would hum. You know, you eat those real chewy candies, so it looks like you're chewing gum. Hope he asks before it gets all, you know. Oh, no, it's a Tootsie Roll, you know. Listen, it was embarrassing. That very same term was dear brother Jesse Neuschwander. How many, anybody recognize that name? Okay, I thought maybe one or two would. He's no longer living. Bishop, and he was just a very matter-of-fact man, never got excited. He would sit down and he'd say, "Oh, right, it's study hall, let's get to study." And he'd study himself, rarely look up. Wouldn't have even have been fun to hum. He would have never looked, you know. Now, obviously, we could have created a problem, and I'm not saying there were no temptations, but that was a tremendous lesson for me watching that. His expectations, the respect we had for him, he just didn't even feel like creating a problem. The other one, I've already said, teaching is 80% personality. That's a stretch, but it makes a point. It just, his demeanor, just how he related, it just drew people into cooperation and respect. The other one, obviously, is challenges. Verbally thank and affirm them. I think at the end of the day, you should sometimes, maybe frequently, say, "Thank you for a good day." 1 year I had 33 students, 9th and 10th graders, 20 girls and 13 boys. Some of my best years of teaching were over those time. I had a lot of students, very good singing. And I remember sometimes saying, "I just want to thank you for a good day. There's an awful lot of you. You could cause a lot of trouble. But thank you. This is good." You know, they just, hey, he notices. He notices we try. He notices when we do better. Give lots of compliments to win the hearts of your students. They will love it and respect. It doesn't have to be a big deal. But you should always follow through with a compliment after correction if you see improvement. Like a little better writing. The next day, "Hey, looks better. Thanks." Other than that, they don't know if you noticed, other than you didn't nag them anymore. Or, "Hey, you did better." It doesn't take much. Stop them in the hallway. Stop them before school. "Hey, I saw you did a lot better in devotions. You sat up and you listened. I noticed. Thank you." Oh, that just, he noticed. They appreciate that so much. Don't you? How much does it take for you to appreciate something that comes to you? Doesn't take much, does it? Doesn't just even a parent just saying, "Oh, you're doing a good job. Thank you." Or must they write you a long letter and send you flowers? Of course not. I just think back of some of the little compliments that have meant something to me. Very small ones. Wow, that's encouraging. Oh, students even more so. Take those little moments to affirm them. Appreciate them. It means so much to them. Let's go to disinterest. I do want to spend just a little bit of time on this. 2 points at first that I want to think about. What happens at third and fourth grade that our students pretty often are going from loving school, excited about school, and at third and fourth grade, this thing starts to fall apart? Have any of you worked with first and second graders that just hated school? One here, one there, but percent-wise, it's very low, right? As a parent, see my students go to school, first grade, second grade, school is great, it is fun, it's exciting. What happens at the middle grades that suddenly this thing wears off? Is it their problem or is it our problem? Is it both? Well, of course, there's no answers that fixes everything, but I would like you to think about that. I'm thinking that more and more recently, just, now wait a minute. I walk into the room and see these first graders. They're loving it. They're chanting things. They're having fun. They're second grade, good third grade, fifth grade, seventh grade. Blame that on adolescence. That's pretty fair, I suppose. But you know, suddenly it's just, it's the cool thing to hate school. And certainly hate English. I mean, that you got to, or you're just not a, you're not a boy, you know. Is some of this our problem as teachers? We're not bridging well as they mature, and we go from that high interest to at least saying that they don't like school. I'm not sure what all is happening. Another reason for disinterest, and I want to be careful what I say about this, but I do think the longer we teach, the more we should be thinking and understanding. And that is our difficulty as teachers to understand what's really going on in the life of the student. Please be careful with this one. Sometimes what is disinterest is dysfunctional homes or trouble at home. And we understand that it moves us to compassion instead of just scolding them one more time. Can you think of some things maybe you've seen in school? Now, here's an advantage if you go to church with in the same community. You know some things. When I started teaching at Myerstown, a fairly large school, 130, 40 students, whatever, people coming from many, I did not know the name of a single student. That's when I came back after being in a different school because it all changed. It's like, you know, who's this, who's that? Well, it took me a very long to even know who was siblings in the school. I still didn't know the families very well because they were in so many different churches. But once in a while, we would get a glimpse into a sad student, a problem, and it was not just an attitude. Remember going to one student, you just, and I, you know what, church of trouble, his dad is silenced. All right, go talk to him. Whew, his face just lit up. He was a different boy, just like that. All right, the teacher still loves me. The teacher knows. All right. Go to them, and if it's appropriate and okay to do that. But sometimes, trauma children, knowing what went on, oh, that's what's going on. One student, his mom wished him dead. Oh, no wonder he hangs his head a lot in school. No wonder he can't focus. And there's, I'm sure, stories you could tell, and I want to be careful again what I say. Sometimes there's reasons for the disinterest because of the emotional weight they're bringing to school. What mom said before she dropped them off. How it went before they got to school. Now, don't look for problems behind everything, but we should be pretty observant. And then be careful what you say with what you observe, that you don't spread that around, or you'll lose respect in the patron body for sure. But be an observant teacher. Sometimes sitting in church, you might see some things and how the dad relates to the boy and or the mom. It's like, oof, well, that's connecting some dots that I never hoped to connect. And I'll just, that's why he acts that way. That's why she acts that way. Look at the harshness or the lack of interest, the lack of discipline. No wonder. And it makes us pity them instead of just pounding them. I'm convinced some of these problems, the child suffers for the situation they did not create. And we see this occasionally in our schools, and of course we see this everywhere in society. Children pay the price for a situation they did not create. And it should move our hearts toward compassion and care. And as we try to nurture those hearts and understand it, sometimes we can free up their mind, somewhat at least, so they can focus better. What else brings disinterest? I'd want to do that just as those are some things that are hopefully are not common. But what else brings disinterest? Come on. Gotta be honest here.
Discouragement from dyslexia or something like that.
Excellent. So some of this goes back to this question here. Students who just don't get it for the way we teach. And this, the dyslexia, that's even more complex. But we all know that we learn in multiple ways. Three ways, right? How do we learn? Well, we learn through, whoops, need one more gate to this fellow's brain. Through the ears, auditory. Others are very visual learners. And others learn maybe more kinesthetic or as they do. That's when they really get it. Teachers, be multisensory teachers. If you are very auditory and you wave your hands around and you just talk and you explain things and, you know, students who are very visual, they just don't get it. They're falling asleep. Oh, you're such an interesting teacher. Hey, you're talking about all this history, or you're explaining how to do things. It all makes sense to you. They're not connecting the dots. Oh, if you would draw a map and show, you know, here's the Jordan River, and here's the Dead Sea, and Sea of Galilee, and the Mediterranean Sea, where you're sitting, Mediterranean Sea, etc. Oh, show them. Oh, now they're learning. Now they see it. So the more we can incorporate multisensory, the better the students will, you'll catch a broader pool. And we all learn in all three ways, of course. But we, as teachers, maybe tend to use our dominant way of learning. So a whole multisensory learning thing is something maybe to explore as a teacher, to think about, am I using that? That's a huge part of getting their interest. What else? Yes?
Well, if the teacher's not interested, that could make an issue with the students not being interested.
Yeah, just simply not, you don't enjoy it yourself. I asked my students one time, these were high schoolers, I said, which subject do you think I enjoy the least? Yes, English. So why do you say that? You just aren't quite as excited when you teach English. How'd you figure that out? It's embarrassing. Yep, it's true. You know, I've had to work hard to at least try to enjoy it. I just enjoy sciences and math more, although I don't hate English, but it's just not my favorite subject. So think about it. What don't I enjoy? And then do something about it. Try to put some enthusiasm. Try to learn and master the material if you don't have it mastered. So yes, being a boring teacher. I mean, really, have you ever wondered how exciting it is to watch yourself? I mean, can you really imagine? Maybe you ought to do a video of yourself from the back of the room. How many have ever done that? A couple have, okay. Do. Or a recording, or just as bad, of course. And listen to it. That is really how I sounded. Or watching. Day after day after day after day. I've had 2 students, I think I taught 6 years, 5 through 10. And numerous students, 4 and 5 years. I'll admit, I ran out of jokes and stories. I mean, after a while, it's just me and more and more. Very difficult. You teach a number of years to keep it fresh, to keep it changed up, to broaden out, because, you know, we kind of run out of resources. Well, yeah, they're not real interesting. Not so exciting anymore. Anything else? I think another one that we as teachers struggle with that teach multiple grades is simply we are under so much time pressure and we cut things tight. We don't go down any bunny trails. Don't go down those every day many times, but you should once in a while. Really. Something interesting, go ahead and go down that trail for a couple minutes. Expand, tell a story, broaden it out, let them contribute, and then, all right, time to get back on track. Hands down, got to move on. You're in control. You're the teacher. But teachers who are very academic and very methodical, day after day, good content, but just teach a lesson, move on, teach a lesson. And I remember those years carrying 5 English books up front every day, or 4 days a week, 5 math books, 3 science, 3 history, because we did some combining. And I mean, 40 minutes or 1 hour to get through those 5 books, because, you know, it moved on to the next thing. Well, sometimes you need to just broaden out anyhow. That's the things they remember often as well, and just adds interest. All right, let's go ahead and move on to this last section just for a few minutes. Disarray. What a challenge. Some teachers are very organized. They themselves are organized. But listen, don't expect the students to be organized and have a nice clean desk if your desk is not nice and clean and neat. Now, I know there's a ditch on both sides, and there can be problems on both sides. There was a secretary one time who had her desk just cluttered and papers all over, and the boss walked by and said, well, I hope your mind's not as cluttered as your desk. And he kept going, and she was slightly offended, so she cleaned it all up, and everything was neat and clean, hardly anything on it. He walked by the next day and said, hope your mind isn't as empty as your desk, and kept going. Well, don't be that kind of a teacher. Expectations of your students, though, that you model that with this issue. I think it does matter if they have books behind their desk and they're just kicked out and spread out. If the floor is dirty, if the things, you come in and there's a whole pile of gloves, ball gloves with coats on top of it. That does matter. And I've seen classrooms like that, and it seems like it just kind of, it sets the environment just a little bit. Just that general chaos, because things are kind of sloppy. I think there should be lots of interesting stuff. There might be a table in the back loaded with Legos, loaded with little electronics that they're messing. Oh, that's fine. That's their space. Let them do it, and it can be as messy as you, whatever. I'm just talking about the overall environment, the disarray, the just sense that things are messy and out of control. And then we want them, though, to do well. Any suggestions on this? Because this somewhat does reflect personality. But I think we all need to work within a range of what works.
I think if our walls are too full, it can make it feel like the classroom's in
Okay? You say full. Is that the word you used?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like if you're long and fine.
Okay. Yes. Good point. Anything else on this?
Start. I found it helped you start the year with fairly empty walls, actually.
Okay. All right. Okay, I think that is excellent, especially if you can fill it up with things that you're studying, right? So you add on to it. That's what you're thinking, yes. Science, we start, you know, adding here. History, we start adding things, timelines, pictures, etc. Excellent way of using the wall space to actually be a learning tool, not just decor. Some decor is fine, but it doesn't have to just be beautiful. It can also be educational. That's sort of another subject, but something to keep in mind. But disarray also, and we've talked about a fair amount of this, but disarray in just your management of the day. Think through the day. How are you going to handle this? How are we going to pull this off? If you just kind of make it up as you go, unless you're a very experienced teacher, you will end up with some disarray, and the students sense that. Not quite sure what you're, okay, well, let's do this, and well, then we change that, and okay, now we're ready for this. Oh, let's see, where are my books? Okay, and you get those, and oh, no, wait, I got to get this over here. And just kind of that shuffling through the day, that creates that environment as well. Think through the day. What are you going to do here? How am I going to handle that? For recess, we'll do this. Of course, some of that you can decide on. But just overall layout of the day is very important, especially for newer teachers. It gives a sense of you're the teacher, you thought through it, and you have it managed. That disarray can be a result of not thinking ahead of what would have been a very reasonable thing to think ahead and fix had we done on it ahead. Any closing thoughts or questions? So in summary, teachers, I am not suggesting, as my disclaimer, that if you do all this correct, as well as you can, that all the problems disappear. You know that would be foolish to suggest that. My encouragement is, when you're facing a problem, to start with, what may I be doing that is contributing to this challenge? And then be honest and try to do what we can to fix it, and then go from there. God bless the rest of your day. You're excused.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.